Mitzvah Reish Chaf Aleph 221, Shelo Lechalos Pas HaKerem, not to destroy the corner of the vineyards. We discussed the field before, now we're on vineyards. And as we mentioned last Mishnah, there is a pseudo machlokes between the Rambam and the Ramban about this mitzvah and its parameters. So, says the Sefer HaKinach, Shelo Lechalos Kol HaPeros HaKerem Beis HaBatzir, that when you're harvesting the vineyard, so you're not supposed to get rid, in other words, take into your own possession, all the grapes. You have to leave a corner of the field, the same way as you have to do for a regular field, for the poor, the vineyard, the same way you have to do for a field to the poor. You shall not lay bare or take all the little grapes of your field. This is the payah for the field. This is what the Rambam wrote in the first draft of the Sefer HaMitzvos. So again, this is not necessarily the conclusion, but this is what, in order to create a machlokas over, because the Sefer HaKinach wants to explain the whole background of the machlokas, so he says this is the sheet of the Rambam. However, it was not eventually the sheet of the Rambam. This is the Rambam's first opinion before he changed it.
Well, wait a second. The Sefer HaKinach why would he have only a first edition available to him?
It wasn't that long after the Rambam. The Sefer HaKinach was a Talmud, according to the current scholarly consensus, the Sefer HaKinach was a Talmud of the Rashba. Uh-huh. So the Rashba was a student of the Ramban, and the Ramban was a generation after the Rambam.
Okay.
So we're talking three generations later. It's not so
a manuscript circulation or something like that.
Right, 100%.
It wasn't like, you'd see there's a new edition and you could order it.
Right, Amazon. So apparently the Sefer HaKinach didn't realize that the Rambam had even changed the Sefer HaMitzvos. He knew that the Rambam in his Mishnah Torah had written not like this, but he didn't realize that even in the manuscript of the Sefer HaMitzvos, he kept changing it. You shall not take every last olive. How does it translate in your... there must be some English technical word for it.
Regarding olive trees, do not remove the air behind you.
Oh, great.
So okay. They leave it like...
Doesn't give you a technical English term, but just gives you the Hebrew, okay? Yore gam kein al pa'as hazayis. So that indicates you have to have a peah for an olive tree. The corner of the field of the olive trees, the olive orchard, is called Peiros. And for a vineyard, it's called Olos. Since we find that there is a obligation of Peah by a vineyard, and there's an obligation of Peah by an olive orchard, therefore it should apply to any trees and not just fields of vegetables and such things. The vegetables are not high in Peah, actually, but you know what I mean. The wheat fields or whatever. The Ramban says, Rambam, this is an entirely a mistake. This v'charmecha lo salel is specifically by a vineyard and doesn't apply to any other or type of orchard. That all the, we should leave behind all the grapes that have no shoulder or drip. So that's literally what it means. And I thought that again, Art School would have a better English translation, but no, it just says shoulder and drip. So there's no apparently technical English term for these types of phenomena in grapes. Uferush kesef was kesef, a shoulder. Pasigin zeal gabizeh. You have clusters of grapes, one on top of the other, so it's like they're, I don't know, resting on each other's shoulders or something. I don't know exactly, but that's what it means. Netef tluyos kulan viordos, that the entire stem is covered with grapes that are dripping down and covering the entire stem. Benimtza lefizeh she'olos heinu hanovim aktanim animtzoim b'charamim lefamim. So what does it mean? Olos are these little grapes that are not so good, and they're not so tasty, and they're not going to make good wine. That's what you leave behind. Hanikroim belaz gatimes. What are gatimes? In medieval Spanish or Catalan or whatever it is, somebody can look it up later, but it's some type of undeveloped grapes. Vizeo davar muad bevadai lefi anira bekromim shalanu. It doesn't mean that you leave the tons of stuff for the poor. It means these little few things you leave for the poor. And we see in our vineyards in Spain that these phenomena are very rare.
Now, but why isn't it simply, after all, vineyards and olive orchards, you know, they have literal corners too. I mean, why did you simply say, okay, just do the same thing you do for like a wheat field?
He's about to say that.
Okay.
You're mechavin to the Ramban. So clearly the Chazal tell us that olos have no shoulder and no dripping. So the Ramban says the olos of the Kerem, when it says v'charmecha olos solel, is not a manifestation of the mitzvah of peah by the grape, by a grape vineyard, but rather it's an addition. It's an additional mitzvah. That's the difference between the Rambam and the Ramban. Ubepas hakerem lo ba'al le'akosu mevor, elo de'gamrina nacharecha recha mizesim. That there is no explicit pasuk that discusses the obligation to leave peah by a vineyard, but rather it's learned out from the obligation by olives that you have to lo sifar acharecha, that you have to leave a peah. Uchadamrinam be'gimara chulin. The Gemara says in chulin, be'perush arba matanos shebekerem, therefore gifts for the poor from a vineyard. Haperet v'ha'ololos v'ashicha v'ha'peah. Peret we'll discuss in a few minutes. And the ololos and stuff you forget and the peah. And there's a corner as well. Shnayim sheba'ilan ashicha v'ha'peah. And a regular tree, there is shicha and peah. V'gomar sham peah bekerem midichsiba. How do you learn out that there's a chiyuv of peah by a vineyard? Midichsiba lo se'olel acharecha. It says, don't be me'olel after you, acharecha. V'amar Reb Levi acharecha zoshicha, after you is the what you forgot. That's if you forgot in the vineyard and you didn't bring home. Upeya gamrina acharecha recha mizesim. And since the word acharecha is also used by olive trees to indicate that you have to leave peya, so therefore since the same word is used by a vineyard, so you have to leave peya by a vineyard as well. When you whack your olive tree to take down the olives, then you can't be mefa'er, you can't take every last one, you have to leave a peah. But Tanah de Rabbi Shmuel, shelo titol tif'arto mimenu da'ainu peah. You shouldn't take the entire thing, the glory literally from it, meaning which is peah. V'yomen haramban zichron avrocha peah b'chol ha'ilonos mizayis. So he says, it's not that you learn out, the way the Rambam presented it in his original thinking is, since you have peah by a vineyard and you have peah by an olive orchard, so there must be peah by all trees. So since you have the two, so it indicates for the rest. So the Ramban says, no, you don't need two. Just the fact that it's olive trees is enough to indicate it for the rest of the vineyards as well, which is very interesting because we know that in halacha, usually grapes and olives have special status. Mm-hmm. So you could imagine that there would only be peah by grapes and olives, and you wouldn't learn it out from the other trees, but apparently that's not the case.
Well, you do have, again, this idea of having small grapes and the clusters and so forth. There's a physical difference between them. Olives are just, they just grow in the tree. There's not you don't have this differentiation you can make on the, regarding the way they grow.
Right.
The grapes. So I don't know, maybe that's why you need both grapes and olives,
Yeah, but according to the Rambam, the grapes, the manifestation of peah by grapes is different because you don't need to leave a corner of the field. Mm-hmm. The very fact that you leave these underdeveloped grapes is the peah.
Mm-hmm.
That equals the peah. But according to the Ramban, this is an additional mitzvah. You have to leave a corner of the field, plus you have to leave the underdeveloped grapes. It's an additional mitzvah as opposed to the manifestation of peah by a vineyard. Shechiyav hakosuba peah beperush. That the Torah says literally that by an olive tree you have to leave peah. Mikerem shalim nad nuhu miloshen acharecha. So from the vineyard, since we learned that out also from the olive tree, that's the source for the entire requirement of peah by any trees. The Amar hu zichron levracha ki Rambam zichron levracha kaseh ha'inyan betikun bechibur hagadol. So the Ramban he wrote his commentary not on the Rambam's Mishnah Torah that he left to an earlier. Contemporary of the Rambam, the Ravid, who attacked, as we well know, a lot of stuff in the Rambam's Mishnah Torah, but he attacked the Sefer HaMitzvos. That's the Ramban's contribution to anti-Maimonidean literature. So he said that he obviously had the original version of the Sefer HaMitzvos, so he says completely wrong. But he says in the end, but it doesn't really matter, because in the end, when he's in his real halachic work, Mishnah Torah, so the Rambam wrote it correctly. He agrees with me now, so Lemaisi paskins correctly, but we still have to point out the fact that he made a big mistake in the Sefer HaMitzvos, which also he corrected in the Sefer HaMitzvos afterwards. Umikal machlok sam ze in lanu tosefes vegerua becheshvan halavin. That a lot of times the Rambam and the Ramban disagree, so you have a different calculation, a reckoning of how to, of the mitzvos. The Ramban will subtract or add or whatever. She'ina machlokes el sharam zrachon bracha yifarish lo se'olo lepeya. Ramban zrachon bracha mefarish oso lo'olos mamish. So the Rambam just says that the mitzvah of, well, he knows there's a mitzvah of peya. The mitzvah of peya does not cover grapes, and there's a mitzvah of olos, which is the peya of grapes. So there's just no overlap. But the Ramban says no. There's a mitzvah of peya applies to grapes also, and there's an additional mitzvah of olos. So he's still only dealing with two commandments. So there's no difference in the calculation of the mitzvahs over here. Olives you learn teach that there's peah by grapes also. So if you did harvest every single last grape from your vineyard, so you'd have to give these little grapes to the poor, even if you already brought them into your house. So the reasoning is the same as peah, that you have to support the poor people. Okay, it's the same as in Eretz as by peah, that midaraisa, it's in Eretz Yisrael, maybe only time where most of the Jews live in Eretz Yisrael, and midarabon, and it's even in Chutz Laretz. V'sheprate mitzvah es peah mivoharim b'masech es peah. That's all the details of this and Matpeya as well as in Maseches Peah. Behold, Yishlanu Lichtov Kan Masham Rizrachan Al-Racha Be'olos Shim Hayu HaKerem Kula Olos Kula Hu La'aniyim. There's a very interesting difference between the mitzvah of Olos and the mitzvah of Peah, for example, is that by definition, Peah cannot be the entire field. You have to be mafresh it. You have to take some out of your field and say, oh, this part is for the aniyim. Also, the halacha is by Truma as well. The Truma has no shear. You can give as much Truma as you want to the Kohen. But if you have a whole pile of produce and you say this entire pile of produce should be truma, so that's nachal. It doesn't even work to say such a thing. Right. If you say I want 99% to be truma and I want to keep 1%, that does work. But if you say that I want the entire thing to be truma, it doesn't work. So there's such a thing as giving too much. Okay. But here...
Sorry, but that's not... No. There's such a thing as not designating the part that you mean. Suppose you took the 100% and you
wouldn't
set
work.
It aside.
Would not work. Doesn't matter. Even so if you really lifted it up and say this is entire peah, it has to be, you have to leave some that's not truma.
Okay.
Or if you took your entire loaf of dough and you said harei zo challah, that also wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
You have to leave part of it.
Hmm.
But here, since it's a physical thing, you're not really being mafresh, it's just the underdeveloped grapes that have kesef and nesef that are by definition olos without your intervention at all. So that... Even if the entire vineyard is underdeveloped and it's all olos, the entire thing is for the poor. Even if it's 100%, you don't have a single mature grape in the field, it all goes for the poor.
So that just you're not allowed to harvest them? Or
yeah.
At what point do you start this process?
One second. Shenemar, oh, it's actually interesting because Shenemar, v'char mechal lo se'olel, v'darshu zirman al-bracha, afilu kulo Kula olos. Even if the entire thing is olos, still it's you're not allowed to harvest the whole thing. At any event, vein haniyim zochim likach olos ad sheyaskil ba'al hakerem livtzor karmo. It's interesting because the owner of the field has to at least start doing something that indicates that he's ready to harvest. That he's harvesting now, so he has to pick up a stem and say, "Oh, it's olos. Oh, I'm harvesting my field now." Even if 100% happens to be olos, so he has to at least go in and say, "Oh, harvesting. Oh, what? This is olos." It has to be something like that. It says explicitly in Sefer Dvarim, not here in Parshas Kedoshim, but in Dvarim, what Kiseitz I think, Kisiv Tzor Karmachalo Seolel, that when you harvest your vineyard, you should not harvest the immature grapes. Fine.
It's interesting, actually, just bring down the first, that there's no shear on this whole thing. So obviously, it's not intended to be for sustenance to the poor, because the poor could never count on any of these,
there could be zero.
So it says it's symbolic, so that that you can't be greedy and you can't keep
it's not
everything
good
for yourself.
You to sell it again.
Right. So it's not like a practical way of sustaining the poor. It's symbolic for the owner of the field to know that he has to support the poor. That's, you know.
Okay, but there's only one of many matanos.
Yeah.
But it's not completely irrelevant.
Well, it's not like the Matan Kani, for example.
But your point is really very good.
That's his first point.
I'm sorry. No. But you picked up on it, and you like it.
I read it at the end of the...
But there, yeah.
Okay. Mitzvah Reish Chaf Beis, 222. Mitzvahs Hanochas Peret HaKerem. That you have to leave stuff that falls from the harvest of the vineyard. Lazo Peret HaKerem Laniyim. To leave stuff that falls during the harvest to the poor. V'humashi Yisparid V'yipol Mino Anovim B'shas V'tzira. That's what falls out when you're harvesting the grapes. That's what falls down. Shedamar Leoni V'lager Tazovosam. You should leave it for the poor and the proselyte. Achar shezachar uperikam echalo silakate. Uvalav de lo silakate. Echtof kol inyan yamitzvah. Bezer zeshem. Before all the details, you wait till the next mitzvah. Well, we don't have much longer to wait now in our version of Sefer Chinuch. Mitzvah reishchav gimel 223. Shelo lilkot peret hakerem. Not to harvest the stuff that falls from the grape harvest. Shelo lilkot peret hakerem. Aval nazovo solaniyim. We have to leave it for the poor. Shenemar uferet karmecha lo silakate. V'hu agarinim anoshrim v'shas k'tifas vanovim. When you pull off the grapes from the clusters, so there'll be a couple of grapes that are going to fall in there, you have to leave for the poor. V'hu adin l'sharha lanos hadomim l'kerem. Anything that's in a similar manner, that's structured in a similar manner, that you harvest by hand and you have clusters of fruit and some could fall, then you would also be liable for the parrot. V'shchayv u'shal l'ukot hagarinim hanoshrim. You shouldn't leave what the stuff that falls. So, like berries. But what does it give examples of other things? I mean, other fruit like apples is not harvested in this manner. You don't have clusters and some could fall through your fingers while you're harvesting it, so that wouldn't be liable. Remez mishar she mitzvah kinyan shikasad nilamal v'peya, same reasoning as peya, help the poor. Midine ha mitzvah mashamar zikron al-bracha, Ezehu Peret, ze gargir echad oshne gargirim hamifratim ino eshkol b'shasa b'tzir. You're pulling the cluster off the vine, and some fall. But it's just like leket. This is exactly equivalent to the mitzvah of leket by grains. So if one or two falls, then you is for the poor. Aval shlosha gargirim shenafdu b'vas achas eino peret. But if it's three, then it's a significant number, and it's not peret, and you can take it. Haya botzer mashlech la'aretz. So if you manner of harvesting is not that you have a bucket or something, you're just taking all the grapes off the vines and throwing them on the ground, and you're going to pick them up later. So even if half a cluster is found there, and you're picking it up, even if something falls, so it's considered to be a parrot. V'chein eshkol shalem shenifrat sham harizu parrot. Same thing, a whole cluster. If you put a basket under the grapevine while you're harvesting to collect any grapes that fall, so that it's like you're stealing from the poor, because you're not going to leave that many peret that falls. So you have to let it just fall to the ground as opposed to keeping it in a basket. Oh yes, the rest of the details are found in Maseches Peah. V'inyan ha-mitzvah, beis ha-mokom. I guess with me, kasu l'mal, mitzvahs peah, say beis, the same thing as mitzvah, all the other agricultural mitzvahs, the raisa and aris, they're all maybe only certain times, and the rabbanon even echlus aretz. Okay, mitzvah reish chaf dalid, which is it's a non-agricultural mitzvah for a change, and it's a very fundamental mitzvah of the Torah. Mitzvah reish chaf dalid, 224. Shelo lignov shum mamon. Not to steal any property, any monetary value thing. Shelo lignov shum mamon, shenemar lo tignovu, you shall not steal. V'almer zichron l'vracha, sheze azhara ligone mamon. This is a warning, a command that one should not engage in stealing anything of monetary value. V'inyan ha-gneva hu, kemo shepirashnu b'seder mishpatim. So what's gneva? What's stealing? As he explained in Parashas Mishpatim, there's a big difference in the Torah between gneva and gzela. Gneva means you steal it surreptitiously. Gzela means you steal it publicly, you know, an armed robber. If someone walks into a bank robbery is a gzela, it's not a gneva. If you break into the bank's vault at night and you steal lots of stuff and you leave, that is Kneva. Okay, that's the basic definition. There's details to it. So Gzela is interesting because Gzela is punished much more leniently in the Torah than Kneva. So the classic explanation is, Gneva is more understandable because, Gzela is more understandable because your fear of God is clearly not that strong, so it matches your fear of other people. You don't fear anyone. So you go up to someone, you pull out a gun, and you take their money. But Gneva, you fear being caught by other people, but you don't fear God, so therefore it's punished more surreptitiously. Or there's less of an opportunity also. That's the more theological explanation, but the more practical explanation is that when you steal surreptitiously, so it is going to be harder for the person to reclaim the lost stuff. Because, A, you might not even realize it's missing for a while, he's not going to know who it is, even if you wear a mask when you're doing the Gzela, so it's easier to figure out who it is if it's an armed robber as opposed to a thief. Shorish mitzvah zo yadua. The reasoning for this mitzvah is obvious. Ki hu hi min ha-mitzvah shaseichel mechayvam. Any rational person realizes that society cannot function if people are constantly stealing from each other. So I want to know, it says here that lo tignovu in Parashas Kedoshim is the source of the prohibition against stealing. So what is about it in the Ten Commandments? It says lo tignovu.
Kidnapping.
Oh, that's the Teretz. So lo tignovu traditionally in the Ten Commandments is assumed to refer to kidnapping and not to stealing in general. So if you say that stealing is part of the Ten Commandments, that might not necessarily be true. Although it's merumas, you could say that. Since it says lo tignovu, it doesn't say explicitly kidnapping instead of stealing, so maybe it wants to suggest also that you should take the idea of stealing in general very seriously, but the specific derivation of the Torah prohibition against stealing money or objects of value is found here and not in the Ten Commandments.
Well, it's also the difference between something which is a crime, a capital crime, a kidnapping,
right?
And something which is dealt with essentially as a tort, right?
But
it's interesting, it's certainly come into the English language and Christian mindset as thou shalt not steal.
Right.
You know, I mean, one of the Ten Commandments is you shouldn't steal.
Right. I mean, the authors, the translators of the King James Bible were not necessarily familiar with all the drushes of Chazal of how to interpret all the mitzvahs, so.
But also, there's only one, right? You could do different words if you wanted to, you know. But
yeah,
the same word. It's, you know, Gneva, right? So it's not it's just.
Right. Midine ha-mitzvah. What are the halachos of stealing? She'asur min ha-Torah lignov afilu al-menas lahachzir o al-menas lemekat. That it's biblically prohibited to steal even planning to return the object or to annoy. Kilomar kidei lahachiz bal ha-geneva la-afilu l'shav la-hachzir lo-adov ra-achar kach. Let's say you just want to get back at someone temporarily, so you steal their watch. Hey, where's my watch? The guy's going crazy for 20 minutes, and you put it back in the... You would never had intention to keep it. Then you just put it back in where he usually keeps his watch. Oh, I found it. Oh, I must have missed it before. So you just wanted to get back at him. You just wanted to annoy him. You didn't really want to steal the object. Still, that's totally forbidden. Bechein amru besifra. Or if you say, kids do, like, if there's a taller kid and you take an object, here I have your thing, I can't get it. That's also prohibited, assuming, yeah. I mean, kid is old enough to know better. V'chein amar b'sifra, l'fi shenemar b'gneva shnayim yishalim. It says in Parashat Mishpatim that you have to pay double for stealing. L'madnu onesh, that's the penalty. Azhara minayin, where is there this prohibition stated? Tamalomar lo tignovu. Lo tignovu, afilu amenas lemekat. You should not steal even to annoy. Lo tignovu, amenas lashalem arba v'chamisha. Even if you say, okay, I want to steal, okay, I'll pay the penalty. So if you just learned Parshas Mishpatim. Right, exactly. If you just learned Parshas Mishpatim, so it says that if you steal, you pay double. Or if you steal a cow or a sheep and you slaughter it or sell it, then you pay 4 or 5 times the value. So you say, okay, it's worth it to me. I want it right now, so I'm willing to pay back later. So you're not allowed. Just because it says there it's only a penalty, here you have the prohibition that you're not allowed to do it, even if you intend to pay the penalty, no problem. So it's interesting that the Sefer HaChinuch says that stealing in order to annoy is a biblical prohibition. which is the opinion of some poskim, but he usually follows the Rambam in his presentation of the mitzvahs. The Rambam says as follows. A lot of people discuss this diuk. Osur lignov kol shehu din Torah. There's a biblical prohibition to steal any amount of money, even less than a shvei pruta. You know, a bezdin doesn't deal with a case of less than a shvei pruta, less than a penny, well, not really a penny, but the smallest, the halachic unit of currency. So it's like chatzi shir. Like, just like, you're, even though you only receive malchus if you eat a kizayis of pork, you're not allowed to eat even one molecule of pork, intentionally. In Echinami. Okay. And, you know what I mean. A tiny, tiny amount of, tiny, tiny amounts of pork. Fine. So it says, so it's like chatzi shir, that you, even though you're not, you don't, you can't be brought to Bezdin unless you steal shvei pruta, you're not allowed to steal any amount of money. And then he says, so he first he starts, Asur lignov kol shehu din Torah. It's a biblical violation to steal any amount. The Asur lignov derech schok, you're not allowed to steal as a joke. O lignov al menas lahachzir, or to steal with the intention of returning. O lignov al menas lashalem, or to steal with the intention of paying back. Hakol Asur, all is prohibited. Shelo yargil atzmo bechach. In order that one not become accustomed to stealing. So you get the impression from the Rambam, but it doesn't say it explicitly, get the impression that all these things may only be Asur Derabanan, although that is difficult because he's Amanas L'Shalim is Asur Derabanan. That you steal it and you really have intention to keep it and you want to pay, that's only Asur Derabanan. It's very strange. So people discuss this diuk, whether it's really correct or not, but it sounds some sort of Gezeira Deraisa, that that the Torah forbade all these things just so you shouldn't become accustomed to stealing. Anyway, but the Sefer HaChinuch assumes that all these things are actual biblical violations. Anyway, of course, it is completely prohibited. Question about stealing the Afikomen. How is a child allowed to steal the Afikomen? It's not good Chinuch, even if he's not Bar Mitzvah yet. That's a good question. This has become so accepted, and I mean, the parents are not really makbid on the child stealing the afikoman. It's not really gneva, but the question is to what the, if it's good chinuch. But since it's become so institutionalized and so accepted, so most people don't have a problem with it. I remember when I was in the biography of Rav Pam, who was the Rosh Hashiva of Torah Vadas, so it said that his mother used to say to her grandchildren, to Rav Pam's children, that by the Seder, he said, when they would say, when they whisper to her, you know, Bubby, I'm going to, ich will ganven in the Afikomen. I'm going to steal the Afikomen. So she used to say to them, Zog nicht ganvenen, zog zunehmen. Say, I'm going to snatch it, I'm going to take it. Don't say I'm going to steal the Afikomen.
Or I'm going to hide it.
Okay.
Yeah. No, there is something.
I never used to hide it. I just used to say, here it is, you want it.
Yeah.
I'm not wasting time. You give me my price.
There's something to be said for being cautious about that whole thing with the Afikoman. It's not totally obsessive.
Yeah, it's not just stealing. It's then stealing and then, you know, holding it up for ransom. It's extortion, you know.
Right, but
it's like the, you know,
since
the
it's clearly not real Geneva, since the parents are not really Machbid, because they could just take into Afikoman and they don't care if their child really takes it. So the idea is, this is part of, I mean, the Chazal say, in Maseches Pesachim, it says that one of the ways that you engage children on Seder night is chotfin matzah.
Right.
You snatch matzah. So what does that mean? This is one of the pshatim, that the children, you know, snatch matzah from people, one for the other.
Great.
Even if it's not exactly stealing. The other pshat is that, like, lachtof, to grab something means to do it really fast. So you each try to, you know, get to the Seder quickly so you can get to the matzah and eat it early. One of the pshatim, different pshatim, what that means. Vedina gonev sela mikis chavero omi beso vehexer hadavra gonev limkomo ledas beolav o shelolidato madino. So you steal something from someone's house and you're really embarrassed that you stole it. You don't want to go to this, give it to the person, put it in his hand and say, oh, I stole this from you, I'm sorry, here you go, here's your coin. So you want to just put it back. You want to sneak back into the house and put it back in the place where you stole it from. So what's the din in such a case? Minyan potro. So the general thing is, general rule is, if the person has to realize that it's been returned. Mm-hmm. So if it's something like you maybe he comes to shop in your store, and you give him extra change to cover the amount that you stole from him. So if it can be assumed that the person is going to be counting his money all the time, is going to realize you gave him extra, so then it's okay. But if the person has to realize that the object's been returned. You can't just put it back and hope for the best. Because they're not going to... The difference is that for something that's not alive, what's he referring to over here? So something that's not alive, so if he doesn't know that it's been returned, so he's not going to be careful about it. So let's say you steal a coin from him, and you put it back where you found it, and he doesn't realize it's back. So he's going to let's say this expensive object, maybe it wasn't a coin, that was on display in your on your bookshelf. So you saw it was stolen. So oy vey, my object was stolen. But on the plus side, maybe I want to have a worker in my house now to do some work on my house, and I'm going to leave the worker alone, but I don't really trust this worker. Maybe this worker is going to steal from me. So I know I don't have any expensive objects now, so now is a good time for this person to do the work. So let's say, in the meantime, you hire this person to do the work, and the thief sneaks back into the house, puts it back, then the worker comes, and says, "Ooh, cool!" and grabs the thing while he's doing work inside the house, and it takes the thing. So a few days later, the thief says to the guy, "Oh, did you find your expensive object again?" So the guy says, "No, I still don't have it back. It's gone." So at that point, the original thief is still obligated to pay the person from whom he stole the value of the object, because he's still chayiv b'achrayuso. It says he is liable for the financial well-being of it until the person knows that the object is returned, so he can watch it properly.
Is the worker who stole it also obligated?
Is the worker who stole it also obligated?
Depends. Well, no, one or the other. Same.
Yeah, I don't think it could be. That's a good question. I'm not 100% sure. I have to look back. We're learning Hilchos Geneva this past year. There's so many details and so many shittas. It doesn't make sense that the second person should be off scot-free. On the other hand, why should they both be liable?
Because good question, they both did something wrong.
Right.
Maybe you're not entitled to it.
If it happened serially, like one Ganef stole something and then gave it back and had to pay double, then another Ganef afterwards stole,
Right, of course. But here, the Chalos Shem Geneva ended, in your case. And then a new Chalos Shem Geneva started. Here, the objects continues to be stolen halachically until it's returned to the owner. Okay. Oh, but for something that's alive, it's different. So let's say you steal something from Kemoshe Bavakama, Perek Yud. So this 10th Perek of Maseches Bavakama, where it talks about all these the cases of stealing. So the difference between something that's alive is, so let's say you steal a sheep, and the owner says, "Oy vey, my sheep is missing, what am I going to do?" So then you could put the sheep back in the with the rest of the sheep. And then when he counts the sheep, he says, "Oh, I guess my sheep is back. I guess maybe it was lost or something." So in that time, you're not Yotze, even though normally with money you are Yotze as long as the person realizes the money's back. Because during the time that this sheep was gone and stolen, you may have taught it things that the owner doesn't like. So that you still have to inform the owner if it was a living animal that you stole the object, so the owner can keep a proper eye on it and retrain it to do the things that the owner wants to do.
I didn't know the sheep were educable, all right.
Well, maybe you taught it to walk in a different path through the mountains when you were, wanted to graze. So now it knows this path and forgot the original path that it used to take. One is not allowed to purchase from thieves. Because, right, if they didn't find people to purchase from them, then there would be much less stealing. Not only something that you know for sure to be stolen, but something that can be assumed to be stolen. Remember, my cousins told me, I saw that they had some interesting old svarim. So they said, I said, "Where did you buy these?" So they said there was a obviously not Jewish person who had, sheets spread out on the street somewhere in New York City and was selling these objects.
Fence for the Torah, right?
Right, so he said... What? Oh,
fence for the Torah.
Right. It wasn't the Sefer Torah, but... So he said that he didn't like the idea of these things being just laid out on the street, so he bought all of them. So that's the question as to whether that's really permissible, because it could very well be assumed that this was a stolen merchandise.
Was there any, names or anything in
there? No, were there?
It could just,
No, the rescue was thrown away as somebody who's found
no, they were
thrown away. It might not have been stolen. In this neighborhood, for example, an elderly person dies, and the people who come don't care, and they throw stuff in the garbage, and a lot of them is Jewish stuff.
Yeah.
It's possible.
There's a dumpster that should have been, in front of the HUC, right, famously.
Oh, the famous stories, right, their library. So,
Jewish Institute of Religion, the New York branch of HUC.
When it was on 68th Street.
They moved from the west side. And I happened to be walking by, and because I was looking dumpsters and whatever, like street finds, I looked in, and I didn't know anything, but I knew it was all swarming, so I thought, who's the most, serious doer of people I know at that point? It was Effie Buchwald, so I called him up, and he brought the whole yeshiva from Lincoln Square that summer over, and it was Erev Tisha B'Av, and the whole complicated
And he rescued them.
And rescued them. I mean, it was an entire dumpster.
Wow.
Disgusting.
He said some very interesting things. I mean, a lot of it was not exceptional, but, and there was a whole Gemara, and,
Wow.
No, I mean, big dumpster. So, in the neighborhood, this happens fairly often.
I mean, I don't know. These were very good quality. Some were rare first editions of things.
Stolen.
I don't know. I don't know. Again, you're right. You don't know. But
he was rescuing them from God knows what.
Right. That's the other. For Svarim, so you have a different Svarim. But I think the overarching principle is don't encourage people to steal more. But in this case,
he should have let them just. That can't be right.
I mean, what's the overarching principle over here? The covet of the Svarim or the...
To
discourage people from stealing?
You're allowed to ransom people, right? I mean,
You're allowed to ransom people in a manner that doesn't encourage further kidnappings.
That's tricky.
So it's the same thing, too. You'd be, in theory, if you would pay 5 cents for the Svarim, so that would be allowed.
Well, how much could they have charged him on the street?
No. Right,
How do you ransom, a person... in a manner that doesn't, encourage further kidnapping.
The Mishnah says, "The Maseches Gittin ein poden es hashuim b'yeser al kedei demehen." You can only pay the reasonable going price. You're not allowed to pay more than that.
You're stealing.
People know because the people know that Jews are very merciful and they'd be willing to pay more than the going rate for captives for their.
Whatever the heck.
So that's what the Mishnah is telling us that in Judaism, we have the principle that you have to go by what's good for the community. In the Jewish community in general, what's good is that people don't get kidnapped and held for ransom. So unfortunately, even though there'll be one Jew who will be not ransomed, then who knows what will happen to him.
Yeah, but isn't a parent allowed, in spite of all that, isn't a parent allowed to ransom a child?
No.
Something like that. No, I know I've heard a shear to that effect.
This is the famous case with the Maharal Meirutenberg and the Rush.
Yeah.
That Rush was the Talmud Muvak of the Maharal Meirutenberg, so he was in jail and held for ransom. So the Rush said, "You're the Gadol Hador. The whole Jewish community needs you. This is a fair price for you. We're not going to pay this price for everyone." So the Maharal said, "Absolutely not. You're not paying more than the regular ransom." And he died in jail. That's why these prisoner exchanges are very, very, very problematic from a halakhic standpoint.
They're murderers.
Right. It's really not. First of all, that's also true. That Alpidin there certainly should be executed, but shouldn't be available for exchange.
Yeah.
But to exchange 1,000, they say that. I mean, they have this far that this is what they need to increase morale in the IDF. So we can discuss that, but in the simple level, these prisoner exchanges of 1,000 Hamas prisoners in Israeli jails for one Israeli soldier, as precious as his life may be, is not, according to Halacha, is really, really very questionable.
It's not very smart either.
Right, but I'm not a politician. Ufikach Amru Zichrona Livracha. She'ein lokhim in a roin semer cholav ugdayim. That you can't purchase from shepherds wool, milk, and little goats.
Oh.
Kids. Not not human kids. V'chein ein lokchin bishomrei etzim operos elbim komus yiduim. So if somebody is supposed to watch wood or watch fruit, so you don't buy fruit from them, because they're supposed to watch it, and they're supposed to sell it to other people. They might be, you know, under the table. They might be trying to make a few extra bucks. In the olden days, women did not have their own property and money. It was basically all fused with the husband's property, more or less. So if a woman wanted to sell something, so we have to be concerned that she was really taking it from her husband's property.
Maybe she's acting as his agent.
Right, so if she says, I'm acting as my husband's agent, that's fine. But if she just says, hey, want to buy this? So then it's okay. Less certain things that it's known that, you know, a woman, for example, women used to have certain arrangements with their husbands that they would get a lightening of their wifely duties, whatever, to cook and clean or whatever, if they produced a certain thing. They would, you know, knit sweaters or something, and then they would make money from that. And they would contribute to the household finances, and they wouldn't have to work as much in household chores. So in that situation, so you would be allowed to, if a woman wants to sell you a sweater, so then you would be allowed to buy it, because that's the whole point. Nowadays, you know, women have their own money, and they have more say in the control of the finances, at least. Even if they don't have their own bank accounts, but they, so this halacha is...
Today.
Right, but this halacha is obviously not an absolute halacha, it depends on what's normal convention.
So with today, like a truck driver, you know, something like that, you'd be suspicious, you'd have to be suspicious if, you know, mm-hmm. for the category, you know.
Right, you go based on the idea behind it, not these exact examples, is what I'm trying to say.
I'll express it, but I...
V'derech klal amru... V'chulam sh'amru hatmein osu likachmen. Even something that doesn't seem suspicious at first, but the seller says, oh, by the way, don't tell anyone that you bought this from me. You maybe, you know, keep it in your coat till you get home, you know, keep it under wraps, so then you're not allowed to purchase it.
By the way, it may be slightly off the topic here, but is it permissible to buy something from a store where they you know, give you a disc, you know, they don't charge you sales tax? It's the store owner who's in violation of the law, you know, I mean, as far as it says...
But that's really between him and the government. That has nothing to do with you. He's going to conduct a store no matter what, and the fact that you're buying from or not buying from is not encouraging or discouraging him to pay sales tax. The government has to crack down on him by themselves.
But you're benefiting...
You're benefiting because you get a price break. That's the whole
deal. And if you're enabling him... I mean, if enough people make it clear
right.
that we really don't like this way of doing business and we're not going to buy from you, we're going to buy from the guy who's a straight dealer, you might have some influence on the guy who cut it out, maybe. Mm. And you are enabling the guy.
Mm-hmm. But this isn't, I still don't think it's as direct a causation mm-hmm. as this case of stealing. This person is a thief. Mm-hmm. So if people stopped buying him completely, he wouldn't do it anymore. But here, you're right, if... But it's Dina de Malchusa, it's not.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, thinking of real life cases, certainly I think if you know that's the situation, you should say, I'm sorry, I don't want to work that way.
So he just pay with a credit card, or, you know, as long as you don't pay cash, you know, he has no choice.
Right, so this happened to me once where I said, I want to pay with credit card. I said, no, don't pay with credit card. Or I'm going to have to charge you tax.
Right.
Uh-huh. So I said, you know, I don't mind. Please, you know, I'm happy to pay the tax. I'd like to pay with credit card. He says, nah, it's really not worth it for me. I don't want to deal with the credit card.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Because if all of a sudden it turns out that, you know, the credit card charges show up, you know, that sort of maybe tip off the government that he's, you know.
Right. And it's so, and his total is so little. With the tax, they say, oh, somebody's something fishy.
Yeah,
but if he doesn't have anything, there are no records at all, then it's also not going to be...
I think if you have credit card charges and like that, this is something which the government can look at independently of your own records. You know, so and that may be some, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know how that works exactly, I don't, you know.
Yeah, he's in business. So
it's certainly it's a case where that, you know, that anything which has like a definite, you know, like a written record outside of, you know, his cash register, you know, mm-hmm. or the till, shall we say, the cash register itself is, they're supposed to be, you know, mm-hmm. kept for you know as a, for tax purposes,
mm-hmm.
then yeah, that's this is where they want you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so
what did you end up?
So that time I was stuck. There was there wasn't another store available, so I paid cash for it. But that's what. But since then, I've found different purveyors. Anyway, so but yeah, that's a good shayla. It's a good shayla because Dina de Malchusa is an obligation, but it's not as strong as a real you know halachic thing. So is it your achrayus to make sure other people follow Dina de Malchusa? It's a good shayla. Yeah. Umash amru ki lagana mefursam lo asu bo takana sashuk. So for a famous thief, there's no takana sashuk, an establishment for the benefit of the marketplace. What does that mean? Umachzer takana sashuk. He says it a little bit out of order here, which is whatever. I'll just read it in the order of sefer kanef. Umachzer halokeach menu hakli below domim v'hu yasedin im haganav. So what happens if you buy from a thief who's known to be a thief? So the purchaser gives the original owner of the object, should the original owner come to Bezdin and say, this is my thing, and can prove that it's his thing. So you have to give it back to the owner. And if you want your money back, you have to take the ganav to court and extract the money from him. If you had no reason to suspect that this person was a thief, and then it was found out that you bought stolen merchandise from him, so even though this is not really what the din would require, so in the takana sashuk, which Chazal enacted later, was that in such a case, the original owner comes to you and says, that's my thing and it was stolen, you have to give it back to him, but he has to pay you for it right away. You don't have to go through the whole hassle of taking the ganav to court. That's even though that's the real din. The real din would be that, sorry, you bought stolen merchandise, you got to deal with the person you stole it from. But since Chazal said that this would be too much of a hassle, this would be too much of a headache, people wouldn't really want to buy from each other because any possibility, remote possibility that would be stolen, they might have this whole headache that somebody could just come and take their stuff from him without paying. So Chazal said, in ordinary circumstances, there's going to be takana sashuk, that you get, if the person wants his thing back, so he has to pay you the money for it, and then the original owner has to take the ganav to court. Mm. Fine. The chas of a Rambam, zichrono levracha, the Rambam says, that if you steal from a shvei pruta and up, so you violate a negative commandment, does not receive the penalty of lashes because you can rectify it by returning the lost object. I mean, not the lost object, the stolen object. The Rambam says that the person who stole, it's an absolute biblical prohibition to steal, whether you steal from a Jew or you steal from a non-Jew, even not a you know a good non-Jew like a Ger Toshav or something like that, or someone who, you know, even if a non-Jew who violates the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach, who worships Avodah Zarah, from anyone in the world, any person, it's a completely a biblical prohibition to steal. Always a Godol, always a Katan. In other words, not a two-way street. You don't need to have the person who steals, the person being stolen from, both chayiv and mitzvos to unite a cheftza of geneva. Even if the object is owned by a little child and you steal it, you know, you go into the street and you steal his ball he's playing with, so then that's geneva deraisa. V'yeser prateha bekama perek shvi uvimekomo sacherim. And the rest of the details are in the seventh parak of Avakama, and the last few chapters of Avakama, and other places as well. So it's interesting that there is a difference we should mention between stealing from Jews and stealing from non-Jews, which is that, while it's obviously biblically forbidden to steal anything from non-Jews whatsoever, there is a difference if the person makes a mistake of their own accord. that we have Toos, Nochri is Mutter, and Toos, Yisrael, Yisrael is Usser. So let's say you go to a store, and the non-Jewish store, and the non-Jew gives you extra change, or something like that, then you don't have to, Alpidin, you don't have to return it. And if it's a Jewish store, so Alpidin, you have to return it. The svara behind this being similar to the idea that you have to, you know, you return a lost object of a Jew and not of a non-Jew. The idea is that really, ethically, in the Torah's eyes, it's their fault.
Yeah, bank error in your favor. You know,
yeah, like, you know, bank error in your favor, exactly. Probably. Ethically, it's the, if you make a mistake, it's your fault, and the person has no obligation to rectify you. However, for Jews, so we have, the Torah imposes an even higher standard to create an extra level of brotherhood between Jews. It's not that the standard is what's done for Jews, and then the non-Jews get treated shoddily. That's the pashut. That's the pashut pshat of what's going on over there. There's a machlokas in the poskim exactly. You know, if you could encourage anyway the non-Jew to make the mistake, or if it totally has to be of the non-Jew's own accord, that's a shaila. I recommend should be machmir on this, especially because it's recommended. First of all, this only applies if the non-Jew is never, ever has any way of possibly finding out about it. But if the non-Jew has a way of finding out about it, then you should. It's a chil Hashem, and you have to do it. Even if the non-Jew is not going to find out about it, so you can make a kiddush Hashem, and you can give back the stuff, which is very highly recommended, although we have to be totally honest, and is not absolutely halachically required, but just the kiddush Hashem recommended. That any time the non-Jew makes an error in a Jew's favor, the Jew should definitely return the thing, especially in the climate nowadays. You have to try to do it. You have to make it a Shoshem as much as possible. That's like, when we were on vacation in California at the end of last secular year, so we went to a winery. I went to we had a wine tasting, and then we had dinner at the winery. And we did not have a good experience. We did not like it. So at the end of the evening, they charged us for dinner, but they forgot to charge us for the wine tasting. So since we were so annoyed, well, I don't want to go into all the details as to why they did not give us a good service, why it was not as good experience at this place, but it was tempting to, we could have just walked out easily, so it was very tempting to say, they don't deserve it. I think that's correct. I think the good customer service, if we had gone to explain to them all the problems that we had, then they should have given to us for free, but I think ethically, there was a very good argument to be made that it would have been justified in just walking out and paying for dinner and not paying for the wine tasting. They never would have found out. They were supposed to have charged us before. They were very swamped that night. It would be impossible. But I said that, no, this is a Jewish establishment, and you're not allowed to do that. You have to pay, even if they don't charge you for it. This applies to both males and females. If you violate this and you steal, so you have to pay. Kemoshim Meforish because of it says explicitly. If you steal most anything, here he gives the example of money or a garment or a donkey or a camel, so you have to pay twice, the double their value. So you lose the amount of money that you intended to deprive someone else of. This applies to anything but cattle or sheep, where if you slaughter or sell them after stealing them, then you have to pay not only twice, you have to pay four and five times, four for a sheep and five for cattle. You have to pay much more. You slaughtered or sold. It's explicitly in Parshas Mishpatim. You're only liable for the penalty of double. And all these penalties, by the way, we should emphasize, are not for gzela, specifically for gneva. For armed robbery, you just have to pay back the object, or the monetary value of the object doesn't exist anymore. This is only for gneva, the surreptitious stealing. So you're only liable for the penalties, even for surreptitious stealing, for gneva, if you were obligated in Bezdin to pay. In other words, you stole the object, then you said, no, I didn't steal it. Then two Adim came and said, no, you stole it. Then Bez didn't say, oh, you have to pay back, and you have to pay double, or you have to pay 4 and 5 times, depending on the object. But if the guy takes you to Bezdin and says, you stole from me, and before any witnesses came, you said, yes, you're right, I stole from you, I'm paying back. You just have to pay the object. It's specifically Bezdin that requires you to pay the penalty and not your own admission. When the Bezdin declares, the Elohim in this case is just the high people, high institution, that the person that the institution, the judges declare to be wicked, has to pay twice. Not if you declare yourself to be wicked. And any knas, any penalty that's found in the Torah, if you admit that you for yourself that you owe the money, then you're exempt. So this judgment is only that for a bezdin to declare that you owe double, you owe 4 and 5 times, is only in Eretz Yisrael. And the Minchas points out all the times when the Sefer Chinuch says this, it doesn't mean physically in Eretz Yisrael, but can only be judged by judges who have official smicha for Moshe Rabbeinu that was in Eretz Yisrael. So since we don't have that anymore, so we don't judge knossos, we don't apply this penalty at all. When somebody steals, they just have to pay back the main object, the actual object that they stole, or its monetary value if that is impossible. There's a difference of opinion exactly if maybe you should volunteer in order for have full kapara to be yotzi de shemaim, so maybe you should volunteer to pay back the kefil or the arba v'chamisha in a situation where you would have been obligated to do so, were you being tried in a court with official smicha.